It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Welcome to Quantum number 55, the podcast where we look at world news and views and try and think about them from a Christian perspective. Let's go to the mass shootings in Dayton, Ohio and El Paso, Texas. Now, there are lots and lots of different things involved here. And I do want to commend to you an article from the Gospel Coalition in the US, which gives us, unusually, a great deal of factual information about mass shootings in the US. And so, for example, mass shootings, which they define as the death of over four people, there have been 64 mass shootings from 2000 to 2018. It has a number of other fascinating facts. Mental illness doesn't appear to be a primary factor in mass shootings. Ask the questions, why are there more mass shootings in America than in other countries? I mean, Americans don't have a higher rate of mentally ill than, say, people in Australia, and they don't have a more divided country than, say, Afghanistan. But here's the stunning factor. Americans make up less than 5% of the global population. They own approximately 46% of the world's guns. There are 857 million civilian-held firearms. American civilians own an estimated 393 million of those. That's 120.5 guns per every 100 people, or 1.2 guns per person. It's also interesting that almost every mass shooter experience early childhood trauma and exposure to violence at an early age. I think these particular facts are fascinating. Now, our general media want to say something like, this is Donald Trump's fault for stoking the fans of hate. And so the El Paso shooter appeared to have as one of his motivations that he wanted to kill Mexicans. And I don't think it's too easy just to get out of that one. Do you know, if you hype up language against people, you have to be really, really careful as a public figure who's listening and who may take that on board. I don't think Donald Trump is directly responsible for these shootings, but I do think he needs to be extremely careful about his language. And I note that in his words afterwards, which were read from a teleprompter, he was much more careful and much more clear. However, on the other side, those who are prepared to call out Donald Trump for his language conveniently ignore things like the Dayton, Ohio shooter seems to have been extreme left-wing. So where are the warnings about Antifa? Or it seems that both speakers were involved in pornography, and it also seems that both shooters were greatly concerned about the ecology. So it's a complex picture and not as simplistic as people might want to say. There is, however, one issue that I do want to stress and I do want to take issue with, and that is very simple. And that is the whole question of gun control. Now, where do we go with this? Well, I was intrigued by a PCA pastor who wrote on his website, he thought it was so important that he had to write this on the Lord's Day. And he wrote on his website a number of statements defending the right to have guns, including that the freedom of worship in America is dependent on the right to have guns, and that if you don't have basically guns, you won't have open Bibles. Now, I find this fixation with guns that some US evangelicals have, and I know some of you are listening, you're saying we have the right to bear arms. Yeah, a right to have a militia, a right to take on the government back in the 18th century. I'm sorry, you don't have the right to have nuclear weapons, and you don't have the right to have rocket launchers, and you don't have the right to have semi-automatic weapons. I think in Dayton, Ohio, the man had a gun that could fire 100 rounds a minute. I'm sorry, that's not self-defense against criminals, and it's not for shooting rabbits. It's a purpose. A gun like that has one purpose only, to kill as many people as possible. And we don't have the right to have that. There have been at least 17 mass shootings in the US so far this year. I think we need to be very, very careful before we rush in to defend a political point of view. But I do. I've tried many, many, many times to understand why it's considered such a fundamental human right to be able to carry a gun. Do you know what I like? I like walking down the street and not seeing one person with a gun. I like living in a country where there are severe restrictions on guns. And I certainly don't live under the illusion that if I can have a gun somehow, it enables me to take on the government and guarantees freedom. Freedom comes not out of the barrel of a gun. But let's move on to another human right, or what people say is a human right. I've had a couple of wee Twitter spats this week, one with a Green MP in Australia who is furious that men are voting about the abortion issue, as though men have nothing to do with pregnancy or children or shouldn't be allowed a vote. In reality, what she was also saying is, of course, that those who disagree with her position probably shouldn't have a vote, even women, because women who don't accept, inverted commas, women's rights, then they're not worthy. And we're back again to this whole scenario of ordering people what they need to believe and how they need to behave. But I want you to listen to a bit of this speech from another politician, Dominic Perrottet, from the Liberal Party in New South Wales. And I found this to be a highly impressive speech.
Now, I know that not everyone is lucky enough to be in my circumstances. Every day there are women out there who fall pregnant in difficult and sometimes impossible conditions. Poverty, abuse, neglect and violence. And I can understand why many of them in that situation would want to consider ending their pregnancies. But our first response as a community should be to help, not to harm, to comfort, value and support both mother and child. But that is not what this bill does. It discards any notion that unborn children have any rights at all. And this exposes a fundamental contradiction at the heart of this bill and in our thinking about this issue. Why is it that when a child in the womb is wanted, it's treated as a precious human life endowed with rights, but when it's not wanted, it seemingly has no rights at all? This is a question that has not and cannot be answered. The truth is our human rights aren't subjective. They don't depend on the feelings of other people or our current circumstances. And they exist whether a piece of paper recognises them or not, with the right to life the most important right of all.
Mr. Speaker, our first response should be to help, not to harm. I think that's a great way of putting things. He was talking about how we react to someone who has an unwanted pregnancy. Well, the bill that's going through the New South Wales Parliament at the moment will almost certainly pass. And that is incredibly sad, not least because one of the churches here, the Uniting Church, came out in support of it, and other Christians have been quite ambivalent. But on the whole, most Christians here have been very strong, particularly the Archbishop of Sydney, the Anglican Archbishop of Sydney, and the Roman Catholic Archbishop of Sydney, and they've spoken up well in public. But staying on the abortion thing and the choice, Anne Faridi of Spiked, who, again, you know, regular listeners to this podcast will know how often we use Spiked, but she had tweeted, "Having a child is never an equal crime, but it should always be a woman's choice. That means access to birth control." And so I responded to her, "But abortion is not birth control any more than infanticide is childcare. Taking life is never control or at least it's never humane control. To which her response was this: that's a very silly comparison. Abortion is intended to stop the birth of a child. Hence, it is birth control, albeit one you don't approve of. Infanticide is not intended to care for a child. Hence, it is not childcare. Well, how we use words is important. And here's the thing that Anne Fouridi really, really struggles with. Killing the child in the womb is not childcare either. Abortion is the death of a human baby. As Fouridi, unusually for someone in her position, as she admits, she says it is the death of a human baby. And so the logic of her argument doesn't make sense. Abortion is killing a human being. Infanticide is killing a human being. Why justify the one and not the other? There's another Australian philosopher, Peter Singer, who justifies both. And at least that's consistent in logic. But do pray this continuing battle for the rights of the unborn. And again, I thank the Lord that as a Christian, I really do thank the Lord that all human beings, including those in the womb, are considered to be precious in His sight. Let's move on to something else. Remember this song?
So kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go. I'm leaving on a jet plane. I don't know when I'll be back again.
Well, it appears that many people, or less people, are leaving on a jet plane. According to the owner of Qantas, or the chief executive of Qantas, it's something that he is deeply, greatly concerned about. So Alan Joyce is his name, and Alan will be known in the Israel Valeo thing. He's very strongly progressive and a gay rights activist and all the rest of it, but not when it comes to this, because this, of course, affects his company profits. And he's warned about flight shaming and climate change hysteria and taking the world back to the 1920s. And to be honest, he's got a point, because one of the problems is that it's again going to be the poor who are not going to be allowed to travel. I thought it was quite interesting. I traveled down to Melbourne this week, and Virgin Australia have your business class lounge where people can go in, you pay for that, and people go in and get food and so on. But the person I was traveling with, we were able to go up to the next one. I didn't realize there was a next one. It's kind of almost secretive. And I found it quite funny, because it's for the very rich. And it's an extremely pleasant experience. And they rush you through bag checks and identity checks and so on. You get the best seats on the plane, etc. But I do wonder if that's what's happening in our society, where those who've got money are mega privileged. They're the ones who'll be able to fly, and it's the poor who are going to be penalized. I think if we're going to have airline taxes, then instead of being flat taxes, those who use premier lounges should be charged a lot more. Incidentally, somebody who regularly uses one of those told me that they were really amazed at how many senior politicians use them. Even those who, you know, standing up for the workers' rights or against climate change, how often they use these things. It's just a part of modern society, I guess. And speaking of hypocrisy and airline travel and Virgin and so on, let's come to Richard Branson. And we're going to look at this issue of happiness. But he rather bizarrely has recently denounced material wealth and says it doesn't make you happiness. He says in one of his blog entries, happiness doesn't come from stuff. Family, friends, good health, the satisfaction that comes from making a positive difference are what really matters. Fortunately, early on in my life, I realized that personal stuff really didn't matter. Now, I'm sorry. This is a man who has his own tropical island. It's a man who runs a railway service that is absolutely dreadful. It's a man who exploited bands through his record label. It's a man who fought hard against the Transport Workers Union being recognised in the US in Virgin. In the UK, he's withdrawn support for the Communication Workers Union, and he's sued the NHS after it lost out on an £82 million contract. The only reason he's doing that is for Virgin to make more money. So I think it's all very well if you've got your own Caribbean islands, you've got your own airline, to make pronouncements about materialism. But I think when he denounces materialism, it's bad for the rest of us. A stuff-free existence, promoting low expectations. Somebody wrote this, that Branson's anti-stuff and anti-wealth blog posts speak not only to his own rank hypocrisy, but also to the degeneracy and decay of the business class. Now, in that regard, here's another story about happiness, and it comes from China. The winner of a 100 million yuan prize has triggered debate amongst Chinese citizens, or those who are on the internet at least, on happiness and fortune. She won a jackpot, which allowed her to, with a lot of free giveaways and travel and so on, to travel the world and to do many things. Now, this is what she said. From cosmetics goods to luxury trips, she said she'd planned her time well to enjoy them all, sometimes just getting 2 to 3 hours of sleep. But she ended up hospital trips because of that. She'd take too many flights and did not enjoy flying. You see the theme in this week's podcast. I don't enjoy flying either, to be honest. But she started this interview on the importance of fortune for happiness. And that discussion on Weibo has topped over 200 million views. Some think that giving her that prize has given her a better life, while others think it's equally good to live an ordinary and peaceful life. Well, I do think the drive amongst the Chinese for wealth, as the drive amongst British and Americans, there are enormous problems within that. We can't find happiness in that way. I mean, what's going on in Hong Kong just now? If you've ever visited Hong Kong, it's one of the most materialistic places on the planet. And yes, there are people who've got phenomenal wealth. Here in Sydney, there are people who've got phenomenal wealth. And it is a bit of a cliche to say it doesn't bring happiness. But what is happiness? Last week, we looked at Nicola Sturgeon's thing about a citizen, a government seeking to bring happiness. What is happiness? I keep coming back to the Shorter Catechism. Man's or humanity's chief end, chief purpose, is to glorify God and to enjoy him forever. And I think until we fulfill that purpose, we won't really find true happiness. Have a listen to this clip from the American Democratic Socialist Conference.
To fight for the demands that we want and to win socialism. Thank you so much.
Quick point of personal privilege.
Yes.
First of all, James Jackson, Sacramento, he, him. I just want to say, can we please keep the chatter to a minimum? I'm one of the people who's very, very prone to sensory overload. There's a lot of whispering and chatter going on. It's making it very difficult for me to focus. Please, can we just, I know we're all fresh and ready to go, but can we please just keep the chatter to a minimum? It's affecting my ability to focus. Thank you.
Thank you, comrade. Okay, is there a speaker against name,
point
chapter,
of personal
pronoun?
Privilege. Point of personal privilege.
Yes.
Please do not use gendered language to address everyone.
Okay.
Yet that really is not a comedy sketch. That is the reality. Somebody is asking people not to talk so much because he's hypersensitive. Remember, these are the people who are going to overthrow the world in a revolution, but hypersensitive. And then someone else stands up and is really angry because the hypersensitive person used the term guys. Meanwhile, if you watch the video, you'll see that people are not clapping, but jazz handing, which is raising your hands in the air. And there are actually, if you watch the whole conference, there are several bits similar to that. Now, you just despair that this is what the Western world has come to. This is what's supposed to be revolution. This is what's supposed to be changing society. And I think, again, of the Christian hope, which in Acts 17, Paul and the other disciples are accused of turning the world upside down. here, we're concerned about the pronouns we use. I have to say, I'm David, he, him, or whatever other pronoun I may wish. Oh my, it is pathetic and it is hopeless. And that's seen in other ways as well. So there was in the New York Times, there was a complaint about robots being white, and it was because people were white. And you know, I watched the Apollo 11 mission to the moon, and the film, and you know, hey, it's a bunch of white people. And the New York Times as well had an article saying it was misogynistic because it was mostly male engineers. Seriously, this is where we are at. There's an American college that wants to ban saying hip, hip, hooray, because apparently it was something that Nazi guards used. They want to also stop people saying US citizen or... In fact, no, they don't. They want to stop using the word American and replace it with US citizen. They want to stop saying long time no see. Instead, staff are being advised to say, I haven't seen you in a long time. What's going on here is the Tower of Babel. It's the deconstructing of language to such an extent that people are scared to say almost anything. Okay, let me come on to something that's just a little bit more positive. Listen to this story from the Netherlands, which was broadcast on the BBC.
So one of our projects is that we have designed a floating farm where we can produce healthy food inside cities on the water. So it's what we call climate adaptive. So no matter how much it rains or no matter how it floods, we can always be there and produce healthy food inside cities.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful. You know, what I love about the Dutch is they're, and what I love about humanity in so many ways, we see the best and the worst in humanity, but human beings are so ingenuous in so many ways, and the Dutch are so good at engineering. And I love this idea of floating dairy farms. When I heard the story, when I heard we're going to look at floating dairy farms, I actually did think, only the Dutch. And it turns out that was correct. Okay, we are heading towards the end. Do you know, we think about all these different issues and we think about them in the light of eternity, in the light of the gospel, in the light of the good news. We have so much good news to communicate. I met with someone who, in the midst of all this discussion, just turned around and said, what's it all about? Well, that's what we do need to think about. I want to leave you with another song, and this is also another amazing story. Actually, no, before we do that, I'm sorry, I can't miss this story. It's from The Guardian, and it's entitled, I Don't Smell, Meet the People Who Stop Washing. A growing number of people are eschewing soap and trusting bacteria to do the job instead, and an entire industry has sprung up to accommodate them. A guy called David Whitlock, who has not showered or bathed for 15 years, says he does not have body odor. It was kind of strange for the first few months, but after that, I stopped missing it. If I get a specific part of my body dirt, then I'll wash that specific part, but never with soap. Okay. Do you know, all that time being told, wash your hands, you know, have a shower and so on. I somehow think I'm not going to be going down this no washing routine. But let's turn to the final story and just a piece of music that I hope you will enjoy. The Beatles, Abbey Road, great album. If you've ever seen the cover, it's a photo, that's a famous photo of them taking crossing Abbey Road on a zebra crossing. And the photo was taken by a Dundonian, Ian McMillan, I believe, and it was 50 years ago this week that it was taken. So I just thought, a great excuse to play a wonderful track, Here Comes the Sun. Just let me offer a spiritual analogy or thought of the Here Comes the Sun. Do you know, it's been a long, cold, lonely winter, and sometimes that happens in the church, sometimes that happens in our lives. But we know that the sun is coming. We know that Jesus is returning. But also, I think in this life, we see the Spirit renewing and refreshing. And it's my prayer that in the midst of all this chaos that we've been talking about, that you would see that. Please feel free to go to the blog. Please feel free to support this podcast. And please feel free to send me news and information. And we shall see you again next week. God bless.